Good morning. I'm going to call the Operations and Administrations Committee meeting to order. We'll start the morning with Mr. Brown's safety message.
Thank you, Chair Hutchins. First of all, in the event there's an emergency, a fire alarm goes off, please exit orderly through the door that you came in through or through either of the two doors to my right at the front of the room. We'll proceed across Fifth Street safely using the crosswalk and convene over by the Building Museum. In addition, if there's a need for an AED, there's one out by the guard station near the elevators. Today's safety contact, spring has sprung. Springtime is a great time to get outside and enjoy warm weather. Warm weather in D.C. also brings out more people onto our system, and the escalator injury rate unfortunately reflects this increase. Springtime months exchanges the winter hazards with those associated with warm weather, such as open-toed shoes and an increase in passengers who may not be familiar with our system. As we've discussed before, over 40% of our injuries are due to passenger inattention, particularly while descending an operational escalator. Additionally, almost one-third of all escalator injuries occur at off-peak midday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and over one-fourth occur at core or stations typically used by tourists, such as Union Station, Smithsonian, and other stations surrounding the mall. Finally, based on initial incident investigations, nearly two-thirds of those that are injured are between the ages of 19 and 60. To avoid injuries in the upcoming months, please keep in mind these risk factors and take steps you can take to protect not only your safety but that of your fellow passengers. These safety and customer care tips include: grasp the handle as you step onto the moving step. Do not take wheelchairs, electric scooters, strollers, hand carts, luggage carts, or similar items on the escalator, and if you see someone about to do so, please direct them to the nearest elevator. Stand clear of the sides of the escalator. Make sure to step over the comb fingers, and do not let your feet slide off the end of the escalator, especially if wearing open-toed shoes. Reinforce this precaution to others using the escalator, especially small children. And lastly, and if you see customers that seem lost, don't be afraid to direct them in the right direction. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. With that, we will move to the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda? Second.
Second,
Ms. Mulder. Thank you. All those in favor? And opposed. Thank you very much. There are no minutes. This is a reorganized committee, so we have no prior minutes for approval. Today's action on the agenda is one item of information, and it's the 2015 annual Vital Signs Report. As we know, the Vital Signs Report tracks Metro's progress in meeting its KPIs, its key performance indicators. And this is Metro's way of holding itself accountable to its stakeholders. Vital Signs Report is unique in that it comes at a time significant changes are taking place here at Metro. On Sunday, the general manager unveiled his go-forward plan, which provides a detailed plan to address issues and to improve the quality of Metro service for customers and stakeholders. I will now turn the meeting over for the presentation from Ms. Burnside.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair Hutchins and members of the new committee. Andrea Burnside, with a new job title as of Monday Chief of Internal Audits, Compliance, and Performance, Acting Chief. So as you said, Vital Signs is our way to hold ourselves accountable to the board, for management to hold itself accountable to the board and our stakeholders and the public. And actually, we started reporting Vital Signs back in 2010, so believe it or not, we're kind of rounding out the sixth year of Vital Signs. We use a set of key performance indicators in the report to report primarily on how we're doing against safety and quality service. And instead of just showing trend lines, which we do include, we ask ourselves two questions, which include: why did performance change and what actions are being taken to improve performance? So that requires analysis, and I think that's what makes Vital Signs stand above other performance reports. So with that as a backdrop, I'm going to be looking back at how Metro performed against our targets set in calendar year 2015, as well as kind of looking ahead as to what we are planning in 2016. All right. So throughout 2015, I've been sharing these trends with the former Customer Service and Operations Committee each quarter. And as you can see on the screen, this summarizes our overall performance results for 2015, the annual results, organized as successes and challenges. And when I say successes and challenges, I mean against the targets we've set. You know, we've heard with a couple of our successes, the elevator escalator program, just because system-wide we're showing that we achieved our target doesn't necessarily mean that a customer on a particular journey would feel the same level of success. They may experience escalators, for example, that aren't working. So if you'll bear with me on this slide for a little while, as I discuss the results, I'm going to ask you to kind of take a look back at some of the pages in the vital signs report, and I'll refer to what those pages are so you can kind of toggle back and forth. So I will be kind of staying on this slide for a little while. So if we look at the key indicators for safety and quality service goals, let's start with the successes. Escalator and elevator availability both surpassed our targets in 2015, and I'm now referencing some of the detail on vital signs, page 7. That's included as an appendix in your report. And that shows that at 93.3%, escalator availability was the highest we've reached since the measure was first reported back in 2010 in the first vital signs. And that's despite taking more units out of service for rehabilitation. Elevator availability was 96.9%, almost 97. Half of the elevator outages were scheduled ones, often lasting months. And we completed 17 rehabilitations of elevators in 2015, which is 50% more than what we did the prior year. Moving along to the next success bullet. In 2015, Part 1 crimes were 13% lower. That equates to 246 fewer crimes than the target, although it was slightly up from 2014. And I'm looking at page 11 of the vital signs now. Similar to the District of Columbia's Part 1 crime rate, overall crimes increased slightly compared to 2014, primarily as a result of increased robberies, and many of those were of mobile phones. If we dig down further into crimes, we find that those in metro facilities and parking lots declined, but bus stop crimes doubled. Inside the bus, we saw fewer crimes with the deployment of uniformed personnel and improved camera systems. Now let's move to the challenge areas. Bus on-time performance showed some mixed results depending on the type of route, but system-wide at 77.7% was practically the same as the year before in 2014. I'm now looking at page 3 of the vital signs report. The on-time metric factors in buses both running ahead of schedule and behind schedule. We improved on the former, running ahead of schedule, but saw the rate at which buses run behind schedule get worse by about 8%. High ridership routes improved by 1%. And priority corridor routes experienced slightly lower on-time performance, just about 0.5%. Rail on-time performance on page 5 of the vital signs report fell from almost 91% in 2014 to 84% in 2015, as rail car power and track equipment problems led to longer and more variable travel times for customers. October in particular was a very bad month for us, and that the on-time performance during that particular month was 75% system-wide, one of the lowest published in vital signs. We didn't meet the daily rail car service requirement for most of 2015, meaning that trains were routinely shortened from 8 to 6 cars, or slots were missed, as we call them, which increases the headways or the time between trains, and that then impacts our on-time performance measure. The September power transformer failure at Stadium Armory had a really big impact on on-time performance for the Silver and Orange lines and the service through December, as we purposefully slowed down the trains for an extended time to deal with that issue. During the middle of the year, we reintroduced midday track work, which immediately worsened service during the middle of the day through December. Moving to our fleets, fleet reliability for both buses and rail were below target for most of the year as we faced numerous ongoing challenges with our fleets, and you can see on page 4 of Vital Signs that bus service interruptions due to mechanical failures increased by about 3% compared to 2014. Bus service interruptions did begin to decline towards the latter part of the year as the condition of our hybrid fleet started to improve and some of the campaigns that we undertook during the year came to a close. Moving to page 6 of the Vital Signs, rail fleet reliability was 13% worse than the prior year as the higher Silver Line car requirement strained the maintenance program. More aging rail cars were removed from service for causes including propulsion, door, and brake issues. Not enough rail cars were available to depart from end-of-the-line stations, and that led to longer wait times for customers and more crowded trains. The issue was exacerbated with an unplanned summer door inspection on the 4K series that took those cars out of service. By the end of 2015, 64 of the new 7000 series rail cars had been put into service. Just last month, the board heard the annual safety report that the safety committee did, so I'll just touch quickly on those results. Pages 9 and 10 of the vital signs show that customer injuries rose this year and were worse than target, driven by an increase from the January 12th smoke incident at L'Enfant Plaza. Injuries did improve in Metrobus and Metro Access, and in fact, in Access, we saw a 30%. The rate decreased by 30% as we saw a large decline in non-collision-related injuries. For employee injuries, despite improvements as the year progressed, we ended the year worse than 2014 and target, and the number of injuries rose back to almost 630, which is up 30% compared to last year. Slips, trips, and falls, and collisions were amongst the most common causes. We did see some crime-related injuries being significantly higher in most months, so 30 police officers were hurt pursuing or arresting criminals, and more employees were assaulted by customers, a problem that we are going to be addressing this year. Finally, customer satisfaction, and that's detailed on page 8 of Vital Signs, didn't meet the target of 84%. Overall, bus customer satisfaction at 81% is comparable to last year. Rail customer satisfaction, however, at 69% is down compared to last year. And we're going to go into more details on the next slide. So Metro tracks satisfaction of customers on a quarterly basis, surveying about 400 bus and 400 rail customers, and it gauges results based on those who rate the service as satisfactory or very satisfactory. While not consistently meeting goal over the past few years, satisfaction has been pretty statistically stable, tongue twister there, in the range of 81% for rail and 79% for bus. But that really changed this year in 2015 when bus satisfaction trended slightly better up to 81%. While there was a precipitous drop in satisfaction among rail customers, as mentioned, down to 69%. This drop reflects the less reliable service I just mentioned in the prior slide, and that's impacting our customer experience. Customer satisfaction surveys and companion research are clear that the only way to substantially improve satisfaction is through sustained and consistent service delivery, and I think that makes sense to all of us. A customer's experience doesn't begin and end once they step onto one of our buses or trains. Their experience starts long before this and ends after they end their travel. So from the time they plan their trip to their arrival at their final destination. We've been measuring important points in this journey. Since we began measuring customer satisfaction, it is these what we call customer touch points, where we have opportunities to improve the experience. So through research, we're continuously trying to strengthen our understanding at other points in the journey, such as feeling secure and the impact of equipment cleanliness. What we found is that these are the drivers of satisfaction for bus and rail. So you can see on the graphic up there, kind of in the blue, that's the rail and the orange is bus. Reliability alone accounts for about 23 to 25%, depending on bus or rail, of a customer's dissatisfaction. The other drivers include things like signage, climate, cleanliness, and so on. The customer research group has been improving their measurements, but not only looking at the overall satisfaction rating, but looking at the average number of problems experienced by customers. So, you know, you get on the train and you're trying to get to your destination and maybe one thing happens to you, but the next time two things happen and it tends to increase. By the end of 2015, customer research revealed that over time, rail customers are experiencing more problems during their day-to-day trips. 2 years ago, the average customer reported less than one problematic experience during their trip. That could include something like a broken fare machine, non-operating gates, escalator out of service, and so on. These experiences have increased. By the end of 2015, the average number of problems a rail customer would experience during a trip per the survey, per their perception, is about 2.7 per trip. Experiencing two or more problems per trip really begins to reduce the overall satisfaction. On the bus side, customers saw no change in the average number of problems that they experienced during a trip this quarter. It's about 1.6 per trip. This has remained consistent kind of throughout the quarters of the year. Okay, moving to, so that was looking back at 2015. Let's look ahead to this year and see what we're doing to better address our service quality and safety goals. The priority areas here are those outlined by the GM this week, to restore pride in the National Capital Region's transit system. The customer accountability report is posted on WMATA.com and will be updated regularly to show progress in all of all the actions planned, some of which are underway already. And there's many, these are just kind of bullets, but there's many detailed action plans behind each of these areas, so I just wanted to touch on a few. I don't intend to read down every bullet. So mechanical wellness of our rail cars is a key one. We want to see fewer equipment failures. We're implementing a rail car program to provide working trains to reduce delays and offloads. So if you kind of dig down into it, so exactly what are you doing? We're going to be overhauling doors on over 500 rail cars, and we hope to, after our ramp up, get to be about 18 rail cars overhauled per month. We're going to be replacing brake valves on over 350 rail cars, and hope to do about 32 per month. Rail cars, we're going to meet all scheduled departures from each yard and no missed dispatches. As I mentioned before, if you don't get the train out, if you miss slots, that increases the headways and reduces on-time performance. We're going to get parts in stock for mechanics to make the rail car repairs. Look at better shop planning so we can repair the rail cars quicker. Conduct reliability campaigns on the 4K doors and the 5K propulsion and HVAC systems. Invest in mechanic training to improve the quality of repairs and reduce the no trouble found problem. And then keep more cars in service by improving maintenance on frequent failures. In terms of the 7K car acceleration, that's improving the quality of production at the Lincoln facility to reduce field modifications and shorten the commissioning time frame. That's the time it takes to get them into service. A track quality improvement plan looks at rehabbing 44 high-priority areas with fasteners, studs, rail, insulators, and so on. Looking at the effectiveness of track allocation, correcting and improving on the data that we collect on the track, which in Maximo is our maintenance management system, and reviewing track standards and creating better work instructions. And then signal priority for buses, there was just a news release yesterday that we've completed installing the transit signal priority software upgrades and transponders on 144 buses. So that's going to occur along a seven high ridership metro, metro bus corridors as a result of FTA Tiger Grant. And then finally, the GM's plan includes a number of customer experience improvements, including communications like the mobile app development, improvements to WMATA.com, and rethinking the customer service center to introduce social media. Okay, moving along with priorities in the area of safety. Of course, hiring our chief safety officer is underway. Radio systems installation, as was mentioned in the news, we just started a major capital improvement project to install cables along 100 miles of the tunnels so we can have better radio coverage. Being more transparent about our progress against corrective actions, whether with FTA or NTSB, those are posted in WMATA.com in great detail. You can go and look at those and see how we're progressing and what percent complete we are. The platform monitor pilot program is being planned for key transfer stations during the AM and PM rush hour. And then, of course, increasing police presence and visibility. Right now, customers feel that only one in five customers see an officer during the trip, and we want to change that metric so that people are seeing the officers more often and looking at data-driven deployment of those officers. Next slide. Improving accountability. We can only improve our performance as an agency if every employee improves their individual performance. So determining ownership responsibility for each metro rail line. We're assessing the rail management structure to determine a realignment with the customer experience. Already non-union people are subject to performance evaluations as well as local too. We're going to expand that to all the bus employees this year, so they'll be evaluated by their supervisors on a 5-point performance scale that will then go to rail. Under the category of altering the fiscal trajectory, the GM is going to develop a framework for collective bargaining that I'm sure the board is aware of. Okay, next slide. So Vital Signs, as I said, has primarily focused on operations, service quality, as well as safety. But we did enhance the report this year to add in business operations results. Some of these results are reported separately to board committees like finance. We wanted to have vital signs be kind of a one-stop shop where you could go to see all the results in key areas. So the business operations section can be found on 12 to 14, pages 12 to 14 of your vital signs in the appendix. And you can see we have for budget, we have two measures, the operating budget variance and capital funds invested. This information was recently reported, the results to the Finance Committee. So we ended the year on the operating expenses side favorable to budget by $63 million, or 6.9%. And on the capital side, we're budgeted to receive about $1.1 billion in fiscal 15 and to be invested in infrastructure renewal. And the committee, Finance Committee, saw a report that we delivered $416 million of the investment through the first 6 months of the year. Moving to vacancy rate, by the end of 2015, the overall vacancy rate declined to 4.5%, which is well below the target of 6%. The board had requested further information on what's called critical operations, critical vacancies. So staff identified 66 positions that we consider operations critical, and we track that as kind of a sub-measure under the overall vacancy rate. And as of the end of 2015, these positions are running at about 11.1% vacancy rate, which is not on target. We set that target at 9%. We're not meeting the target there. Those are often the more difficult to fill positions, engineering positions and control center positions and things like that. Moving ahead with business operation results, the DBE is a new measure in vital signs, and it calculates the percent of contracts awarded to DBEs each federal fiscal year. We set a target for the percentage of contracts awarded to DBEs. In recent federal fiscal years, that target has been 25%. We did not meet that target. We only reached a rate of 17% for the federal fiscal year. And there's further details in the data tables on page 26 of Vital Signs that goes into exactly how much did we pay those DBE contractors. So you can look at that information if you like. We've also established sustainability targets to reduce costs and improve service. And there's two measures, one for energy use, which is British thermal units and tracked based upon the number of bus and train miles operated annually. And the second, not shown up on the screen here, but detailed on page 14 of Vital Signs, is water use. So we consumed energy at the same rate as last year. We didn't meet the same level of savings achieved in 2014, which saw a 2% reduction compared to 2013. While we did have a lot of initiatives that reduce energy usage in our facilities, like LED lighting, more efficient equipment, and so on, these savings, unfortunately, were negated by declining efficiency in our aging CNG bus fleets and also increases in traction power usage. So as we have more crowded trains, and you can see that on page 15 on the passengers per car, that means the trains are heavier and they use more electricity. And then water usage declined to 0.86 gallons per vehicle mile, better than the target. We use fewer gallons of water. We've taken a number of measures to reduce consumption, and those are having a good impact. Okay, next slide. In the Momentum Strategic Plan, the board identified some performance measures to track on an annual basis for the Connect Communities goal. And to impact these measures, we need support and leadership from our jurisdictions. And you can see the detail on how we did on page 16 of the Vital Signs. But basically, on the bus stop accessibility, we had set a target of 100, and we continue to improve bus stops at a very brisk pace and more than met the target. We achieved 255 completed during the year. This coordination continues with the jurisdictions and obviously has been successful. Households and jobs within walking distance to transit generate walk ridership, which costs us very little to facilitate. So these next metrics, we measure the combined effect of regional growth within the areas located near transit, and then how well we connect with that growth by making the areas walkable. Growth near transit measures how well our local partners are planning for future growth to be served by transit. And again, you can see those results on page 16. And then rail station walk score seeks to remove barriers to entry so that we can realize more ridership by people walking on foot or bicycle. So we have a walk shed coverage ratio for each station. And again, those results are on page 16. Okay, next slide. Going ahead in 2016, you'll see some improvements in vital signs, including we'll be adding some procurement measures. The board, when they approved the revised procurement policies, asked us for KPIs to monitor how we're doing. So we will add those into vital signs this year. The FTA is defining state of good repair measures. We'll be adding those into vital signs. Once that requirement comes out, we have measures of rail crowding, passengers per car. We would like to have a complementary measure of bus crowding. And then, of course, you know about the rail customer travel time score that we'll be introducing this spring. And then finally, this is just a great quote I found on data-driven decision-making. We collect a whole lot of data here at Metro, and the challenge is to harness all that data and turn it into useful information for decision-making. We're moving that direction. We can make better predictions and smarter decisions and move away from gut and intuition towards data and rigor. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ms. Burnside. Let's open it for discussion, and we're really about out of time. But let's start with Mr. Giancola. Is there Mr. Bolger? And then we'll.
Thank you for your report. Obviously, the bus and rail reliability of our fleets is very distressing, as well as the on-time performance. But I had four questions on some of the appendices. On page 4, you talk about bus fleet reliability, and you mentioned a November mileage discrepancy. And some of these questions you may not have the answer to, so you may have to go back to staff working in those areas. But I don't quite understand what that means. Question 2 on page 6, rail fleet reliability. We've known for some time now we've had a parts shortage and a spare parts ratio reduction. What have we been doing to fix that? You know, it's been existing for some time. So has it been fixed yet? Or, I mean, you know, let's give us some status on that. On the DBE on page 13, it's a very confusing chart. You know, it seems to imply the horizontal axis is monthly, although when you look at DBE, I think it's cumulative. You know, you want to, at the end of the year, say you've reached 25%. And so I don't quite understand the chart. So that would require some elaboration. And finally, on page 16, bus stop accessibility. About 2 years ago, we did identify by jurisdiction those most critical bus stops that needed to be fixed. And I'm kind of curious in how they've progressed in the jurisdictions on those that were identified. I remember in the District of Columbia specifically, there was like 70 or so bus stops that were identified as most critical. And I know that the district has worked on those, and it was down to 50 the year after that. So I'm kind of curious to get some feedback on the jurisdictional critical bus stops that were felt that were the highest priority ones, and are they making progress on it? You know, so that's something. So those are my questions. Some of you may know, some may have to go back to the staff for elaboration.
It definitely is a combination of knowing some and having to go back to the staff. So on your first question on the bus fleet reliability, mileage discrepancy.
I can hear you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm not hearing you.
Not close enough to it. Is that better? On the first question on page 4 on the mileage discrepancy, the calculation of bus fleet reliability includes mileage. So whenever we see something outside a normal range, we question it. And so we've questioned it with the bus folks. We haven't received an answer back. It's still under investigation. But we just wanted to be transparent about
it.
It's fairly minor, but it's something we noticed. And you may remember in... Because it could impact the results. We're just trying to be transparent. It's unknown until we resolve the issue. I just wanted to put it there. We did have an issue, if you remember, back in 2013, where we lost 6 months of on-time performance data due to a technical issue. So whenever we have a data issue, we just want to be clear that there is some challenges and we're trying to address them. The second question I'll let Andy address, which was on the rail.
Yes. Oh, thank you, sir. Good morning. Absolutely. Parts have gotten better. Statistically, since I've been monitoring the situation since September of 2015, yesterday was the least amount of rail cars we've had out of service for parts since then. Yesterday we had 50 rail cars out of service, which really equates to, you know, 25 along with their, you know, married pair. And I believe in this forum, perhaps in November or December, there was discussions we were in the 80. Range or so. So we are getting better. It certainly is a focus, and I can tell you as a consumer of our buying process, it is dramatically improved. That said, We still need to ensure we're not short-sighted. We are taking advantage of the board's action to allow us to execute the parts bridging program. There are longer-term, you know, systemic procurement issues relative to, you know, rail car parts that still exist and still need to be addressed before the expiration of that action.
Madam Chair, you know, bus and rail fleet reliability is very critical right now, and it's very low. And I don't know how often we get, we certainly get these reports quarterly, as I recall. But, you know, I don't know how often this committee will be meeting, but I think we really need to get an update on that every time we meet. So if we meet more frequently, we need to hear, you know, how they're progressing on that. Like, let's take a look at the numbers for this next couple months and see what it looks like. So I would suggest we add that to the agenda in future meetings.
Yeah, the vital signs is produced on a quarterly basis. Yeah. So for the first quarter of calendar year 2016, January, February, March, we'll be here in May giving you those results.
So we could move it up. I guess what Mr. Giancarlo is saying, maybe a more frequent piece will do. And I think that what we could do is judge it by starting that to see whether or not that gives us some insight that helps us on the oversight of it, and then continue with the quarterly larger part of the report that we do. So on those particular ones, we could be glad to adjust the agenda to do that. Yeah. So I think it would also answer some of the other questions.
I would like to get back to you on that one. The bus stop accessibility, yeah.
There's a larger report out. I think that reports on the jurisdiction, so that one should be able to come back to us right away. I don't know where we stand in terms of how we put together the WMATA part, but just knowing from a regional standpoint, we have that data. So we find it how we can report it to us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Bolger, and then we're going to have to.
Bring back KPI rail fleet reliability, mean distance between delays by rail car service. It looks to me that the 7,000 series, correct me if I'm wrong, the second worst type of rail cars we've got in the U.S. cars. Is it breaking in?
No, sir. This is the breaking in period. Per the contract, there is a positive sloped mean distance between failure increase that happens in increments. So initially, you know, after 2 months of performance, there's an expectation that I think there'll be at, I don't want to say, you know, at 10,000, you know, or and then at 6 months they're at, you know, 50,000 contractually. They're required to be, you know, at 200,000 miles mean distance between failure.
The chart. It's performance data. It's on page 42 of my book. The 1, 2, 3, third KPI down. The 7,000 series, Madam Chairman, are breaking down after 36,000 miles. 200,000? Man, we got a long way to go.
Yes, sir, absolutely.
And that's unbelievable. Whereas the 2,000, 3,000 series are getting 83,000 miles before they have to be fixed.
Yes,
it's amazing. Could you get back to Tony's point? I'd like to add that to the list and also know what the story is on delivering these rail cars from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yes, sir.
And how we're doing. And I further explain the breaking in here, Andy. I don't get it.
Yes, sir, absolutely. We can certainly provide the requirements of the contract for the break-in period and what our expectation
well,
is.
What's the contractor Kawasaki's position on breaking down so often?
Well, sir, per their performance requirements,
yeah.
They have exceeded those.
They what?
They have exceeded those that they're required.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I think that maybe the other question may be what this is measuring, because if we're measuring it in the testing mode and it has a deliverable to us, are we measuring the same data that we would want to measure it based on the contract versus what the expectations are that we're getting out of testing?
Yes, I don't have
I don't
the details.
I'm just asking.
I had the same exact question when I first got involved in this. And the way we looked at it was, they said, okay, I need to understand what are the performance requirements of the rail car as soon as it's accepted. How does that weigh against the requirements of the contract? Are we exceeding those requirements? And we are. I agree. It is certainly minimal in the beginning, but we are seeing that increase in performance as it's burned in.
Well, I'm not seeing it, Andy. Sorry, Madam Chairman. If you go back to when we first got the 7,000 series cars in June, okay, they were breaking down after 14,900 miles. And now we have through December. Now, we don't have January, February. Their highest month was September, where they got to 70,000 miles without having to break down.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And I would have to show you so there were, I believe it was in October, we accepted 12 rail cars. And then there were 2 months where we accepted none. And then in January,